Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening today. I hope this conversation will serve you on your own path of living life fully. The Inner Game is our relationship to our purpose, to the contribution we want to be in bringing forth a more beautiful world. These are conversations with people who are up to something evolutionary in their lives, and an opportunity to hear about how these people grow personally and how that strengthens their organizations and businesses to make a bigger difference. Our guest today is Jennifer Johnson, Executive Director of Soul Theater, a children's theater program based here in Carbondale. Thanks so much for being here, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to start by having you share with us what is unique about Soul and its commitment to serving children.
Soul Theater was founded out of a need that Logan Carter and I felt we had in the Valley for a children's theater program that was based on the child's development off stage, and the stress being on their character off stage being more important than their character on stage. And both of us having come from theater backgrounds and having experienced personal growth through theater, felt that it was something that was missing to a certain extent in the programs that already existed. And so we wanted to bring that to the children of the Valley.
And what are some things that you experience with kids because that's your focus? What do you feel like you get to kind of witness or hold the space for and you know, get to experience with kids?
Honestly, it's made for an extraordinary life. On an almost daily basis, whether it be at a rehearsal or during a performance or during an audition or just an interaction outside of my studio with one of my students. I feel like the lessons that they're learning with us as a part of our casts or our camps is affecting them, who they are as people, as they're growing. And I don't really think that I realized when we started Soul the impact that it was going to have on kids and the impact that that would have on me and how it would shift the way I've looked at theater and the way that I looked at the performing arts and the importance that I placed on the performing arts in terms of a child's development. And so the things that I've gotten to witness are students coming out of their shells, raising their hand more frequently in their classrooms. I've heard from students' teachers telling me that they're more outgoing in classes. I've had more than one student who was able to stop being so in their head. And I'm not articulating it well. Students who were actually able to stop going to therapy for anxiety disorders, for depression. Kids who have come to us with speech impediments that through the course of a show will overcome a speech impediment. And I'm not saying that this is that we are speech therapists. I'm not saying we're therapists. I'm saying that by tapping into something that speaks to the child in a unique way, something that's within them and giving it a voice, we're giving them a path to who they are as a person that they may not have had before. And we're kind of shining a light on that path in a way that maybe hasn't been shown to them before. I think one of my favorite parts of what we do is one of my favorite responses has been when a parent has come to me and has said, "I'm so glad you get my child because I don't." I don't know where this comes from. You know, we're, you know, sports fans, or we come from, you know, a farm family, or we come from a family that doesn't have a background in the performing arts.
Right.
And suddenly they find themselves with this fairy nymph of a child who wants to sing and dance and and be on stage and express themselves through theater. And they just bring them to me in this kind of, "Here, do something with this. My child is lost. I don't know what they need." And we're like, "Oh, it's one of our people. Yeah. Yes, come to us.
Right.
Come to us, little misfit, and we will show you your way. You are one of our people." And that has built a really beautiful community. And so frequently at the end of a production, we're told by the kids that the thing they like the most about Soul is that they feel like they've become a part of a family, mm-hmm. and that that's what's different about a Soul production, is that you can leave any production with friends, with new friends and new people you've known and new things that you've learned. But with Soul, you feel like you have a family that you could return to at any point. And that's the most important thing to us.
It's interesting that you say family, because when you say that, it makes me think of, you know, when we're in those intimate relationships, we can show all of the parts of ourselves, mm-hmm. the things we don't like so much,
yeah.
the things that are hard, and feel like it's a safe place to grow.
Yeah. And that's the space we're trying to create, because we can't force that. We can't force a child to come out of their shell. We can't tell them that they have to, we can tell them they have to project more. We can give them notes on their acting, but we can't tell them this is how you're going to find your voice. And here's where it is. Here's where it's been hiding. But there's something transformative about theater. I think being able for them to be able to escape into a character allows them to kind of get outside their heads mm-hmm. a little bit, and allows them the space they need to be comfortable with all the different parts of themselves that maybe they need to express to be a part of the character that they're playing. Maybe they're not okay with being assertive, but their character's assertive. So they get to practice being assertive. They get to practice being confident. They get to practice being these things that maybe they're not inherently. And they get to learn how that feels. And it's very fake it till you make it with some of these things. And it's the first safe space for them to do that in many cases. Maybe they're coming from, maybe they're bullied. Maybe they just don't have that many friends who they can express themselves to. And they come to us and we're like, get up on stage and be loud and be crazy and let your freak flag fly a little bit. And a lot of them have never been told that before.
Yeah.
And we not only tell them that, we encourage it. It's a place where it's like, where are the things that are specific and distinct about you? And we shine a light on them. And we tell them that those things are beautiful and useful and that they're their gifts. And that can change their little lives, which is pretty great.
And this has been a real personal journey for you. We were sharing with me that when you started in theater, you had some struggles yourself.
I did. I had a speech impediment. I couldn't say my R's as a child. And I actually shared this with my Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer cast a few years ago, and we were doing that as our Christmas show. I couldn't say my R's, so I was constantly being asked two things. I was constantly being asked to sing the song Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, because I sang it Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, which made me think I was a brilliant singer, so I started singing all the time. And then, but the older I got, so when I was 5, 6, 7, and I still had the speech impediment, I was teased in school. And so I became very quiet, which again, I was saying to you, is very hard for my friends to believe now. But I became very quiet and reserved. And so my mother signed me up for a Christmas pageant at my church, The Little Star. And I got cast as The Little Star because I could sing, but I was terrified. I had to get up in front of my entire congregation and say lines and sing a song. And so I started overcoming that fear of speaking in front of people. And I started participating in my class more. And I started raising my hand more. And this had been a concern of my teachers and my parents. My teachers had actually talked to my parents about she's a very bright child, but she doesn't participate in class. She doesn't share. And through theater, I started to grow more confident in my voice. And to be perfectly honest, I didn't go to school to teach theater. And I did theater for 15 years on my own as an adult. I never really thought that I would teach children theater. And it's the most rewarding thing I've ever done. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to be able to pass that gift along. Because we were talking about the other day, I never put together I knew how important theater had been to me, but I hadn't really put together that I would be able to pass that on.
Mm.
And that was something that was inside me that I didn't know I wanted to express, which was basically, let me do for you what was done for me, right. And kind of paying that forward.
And you were telling me about the the kind of culture at your church that was very formative for you in being able to kind of break out of your struggles?
Yeah, it was very supportive. I had an incredibly supportive church family. It was one of those stories where it's you don't hear a lot of. Mm-hmm. You hear about the stories of people who had kind of a difficult time with their church or being who they were in their church congregation. That was not at all my experience. My church family was actually a lot more supportive than my school community, mm-hmm. where I was really a misfit and really an outsider. And at church, I had this great group of friends that sadly didn't go to school with me because they went to schools in the other schools in the district. But I had this place where I felt accepted and I felt unique and I felt supported. And I never felt like, I felt like there was nothing I could do that would get me kicked out of this space. Mm. I felt like I could do no wrong as long as I was doing the next right thing. And that was incredible for me. And not only did it bolster me as a performer, it really helped me as a child. It helped me develop as a person because those were my real friends. Those were my closest friends, were my church family and my church friends.
It sounds like that's the kind of culture that you've really been able to create at Soul.
Yes. We have a student in this production who, of course, I won't say the name of, but one of our students in this production, until probably a month into the rehearsal process, we didn't realize that they have social issues at school. And then some of the parents that know this child started talking to us about it, like, oh, it's amazing that they're so accepted. It's amazing that they're so embraced and that, and my stage manager, Danny Kopf, and I are looking at each other saying, this kid's incredible. This is one of the funniest, sweetest, most conscientious, committed cast members that we have, even to this tiny role that they have in the show. And it never occurred to us that that this child would be anything but soundly accepted by the rest of the world and their peers. And that's not what their experience has been. So they get a fresh start with us because they arrive without any kind of preconceived notions about who they are. Unless a parent has told us and given us a little backstory, which very rarely happens. Normally we get the backstory after the fact, but unless we get a little bit of information up front, we just treat everyone as equal. Mm-hmm. We treat everyone as if they are coming from just the most well-adjusted background, mm-hmm. this totally positive environment, and we just treat them, we just...
Like they're whole.
Yes, like they're whole, and they aren't. Yeah. And, well, some of them are.
But they inherently are.
Inherently, exactly, exactly. But they might not feel that. Right, that might not be something that's their day-to-day experience. Yeah. And so being able to treat them with respect and with dignity and with love and just fully embracing every little piece of them. It's really quite something when you find out that that's not their outside experience, because also you have to give it to the child. You really do, for to come into something, maybe coming from a background of having been rejected in the past and still just being who they are and going, well, okay, I'm in a new group of people. I can make a new first impression and letting them flourish within that is really pretty great. Because it's so, one of the things we stress to the kids is you can be silly, you can be quirky, you can be all of these other things as long as you're kind. It's a rule. Kindness is a rule, and it's a guiding principle.
Right.
And that you assume the best about one another. And we're very much in the business of positive reinforcement. And when someone does something right, really concentrating on that as opposed to pointing out what they're doing wrong. It's about redirection and encouragement. And it's been hugely successful.
What a gift.
It really has been. It's been pretty great.
This is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KD&K. My guest today is Jennifer Johnson of Soul Theater, and we're talking about how her own commitment to her personal development is expressed in serving children and developing their authentic selves. How do you start your day, or do you have practices in your day that help you to walk your talk?
Absolutely. I have an amazing life coach, which full disclosure is Gwen, who encouraged me to get into the habit of meditating, which is something that I take very seriously now. And I'm not going to say that I do it every day, but I would say 3 or 4 days a week, I make time for it. And on the days that I make time for it, it's much like on the days that I make time and make sure I'm working out. I feel more awake. I feel more clear-headed. I feel more centered and focused. And I've taken time for myself in this selfish way, in the best sense, so that I can present my best self to my students. Because the other thing that I do is I'm the drama teacher at Ross Montessori. And so I start my day with kids and I end my day with kids at Rehearsals for Soul. And I don't want to say often, because it's not often, but you know, a couple times a week, I'll end a school day just exhausted. And I have an hour between the end of the school, not even an hour, between the end of the school day and the beginning of a soul rehearsal, which is thankfully right across the street at the Third Street Center. And so I'll have like maybe a half hour to myself. And if I've had a bumpy day, I'll meditate and I'll let that day go, because none of my students is responsible, especially not the cast who I've just come away from a group of students. I'm going to a new group of students. I don't know what kind of day they've had, and I'm asking them to leave their day at the door. It's the, one of the other things that we say, just leave whatever you've been through today at the door. Mm. And we come into soul together and we form this unit. And if any one of us is off, you can feel it. If any one of us is having a bad day, and it can't be me. And that's learned. That wasn't from the very beginning. I've had bad days. They've seen me in bad moods. But I do my very, very best to leave my day at the door and to only be affected by what happens during the course of the rehearsal. You and I were talking the other day about the emotional week that was the week of the election, and the emotional week that that was for our community as well, with the death at Carbondale Middle School. And then, you know, 2 days later, there was the election, which was so divisive. And we had rehearsal Wednesday night of that week. And we came in and we talked about it. We sat down as a cast and we were emotionally exhausted, because kids feel things coming from the grownups. You know, they weren't participating in that process, but they channel that energy. They channel what they're receiving from us. Sure. And so my energy at that moment, which was really messed up, needed to level out before I talked to them about finding the right headspace in which to have a rehearsal. And one of the ways in which we did that is we ended up having a 20-minute dance party at the beginning of rehearsal. Sometimes you just can't talk about stuff. Sometimes you just need to dance it out.
Right.
Sometimes you just need to dance it out.
Yeah, move some energy.
And move some energy. And by the end of that dance rehearsal, or that dance break, we started our rehearsal. It was one of the best rehearsals we'd had at that point. And the energy that they brought to their characters was just joyous and untethered,
right?
And unfettered by everything that was happening outside. And that's what I think theater provides for the rest of the world, for the people who come in and just can escape for a couple hours watching it. And to a greater extent, the people who are doing it. We get to leave our lives behind. We get to leave anything, that any argument we had, any conflict we're having, anything that's going on in the world, we get to leave that outside. And we get to create our own space and our own universe and our own collective energy. And for them to practice that and to learn that they can do that, I think is just an incredible, incredible gift and a resource to send out into the world.
And it's a gift that you model that.
Thank you.
And I want to get a chance to ask you about the creative process of an artist. We talked a little bit about this because I think it's so interesting that you are an artist in recovery. Mm-hmm. And we often think of artists as having this sort of pathos, and there's a lot of sometimes abuse of substances that goes along with that. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about your journey of, you know, healing and growth with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And experience.
Absolutely. I'm a very proud recovering alcoholic. And I know that there's, and you know, part of the, one of the traditions is that we are anonymous at the level of press, radio, and film. But there are several of us who are just vocal within our community because you want people to know that you're someone that they could come to if they needed to, which is why I'm kind of out, right. I guess you would say.
Yes. With that.
And for me, when I got sober 12 years ago, one of my greatest fears was that I wouldn't be funny and I wouldn't be entertaining and I wouldn't be interesting anymore. And what I discovered was I wasn't as funny or as entertaining or as engaging as I thought I was when I was drinking or high or whatever. So there was that, but there was also, I was actually able to find my true humor and my true voice and my true talent.
Right.
And I was able to use those things to my betterment and use them as part of my recovery and as part of my self-therapy. And I found that the idea that, you know, the tortured artist who has to be using to find their creative voice, I find that to be a misconception. And I find that that is based in fear. That you're afraid that you won't find your voice unless you tap into it with alcohol or with drugs or whatever you're using, whatever you're abusing.
Right.
And for me, the opposite has been true, that the better I take care of myself, the more I'm able to express myself and the better I'm able to express myself as an artist.
You had said that the, and I love this, the authenticity of sobriety is more honest and expansive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think part of that is being able to remember the experience and not just remember it and as in these are the details of what the experience was or getting up on stage, but the muscle memory of it, the feeling of the anxiety, the nervousness, the getting over the nerves of performing, the pride in a successful performance, the ability to be there and connect with your fellow performers on stage. If you're an actor in a scene, if you're not there physically because of something you've taken, you're not really there mentally. And one of the great sayings that's backstage at Thunder River Theater Company, Lon Winston always has us as a cast, because I've been a cast member there before, has us join hands before the show, and we make eye contact each one with another, and we say, I'm here for you. And we've passed that on at Soul. I brought that into Soul's culture. So every night before every Soul show, the kids look around at one another and say, I'm here for you. And what that means is I'm present with you on stage in that moment when you may feel most alone. I am here for you backstage. I'm here for you offstage. I'm here for you on stage. I am here for you. And support that web that you create, that support, creates a safety net that you don't have when you're out there behaving selfishly or doing something.
Just unconsciously.
Unconsciously.
Right.
Unconsciously. That's right. The perfect word for
not being fully present.
Not being fully present, not being fully conscious, and in those moments to share those moments.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can find the depth of your voice and the real truth of your performances if you're doing it through a veil and if you're doing it through that haze. I don't think that you're giving yourself enough credit as an artist that's in you.
Right.
That's in you either way. And it can be so much brighter and louder and better and more expressive if you're in control of it in some way and not muffling it with something that you think you need. Because you don't. You don't need that. I didn't need that. I didn't need liquid courage. I needed courage.
Right.
You know,
the real thing.
I needed to really figure out how to be courageous.
Right.
Which is so much more terrifying.
Yeah.
And so much more satisfying to get over and get beyond. I remember my first opening night without doing shots backstage. Because I would do a shot before every opening night.
Right.
And I was 8 times as frightened as I'd been, because I was like, what am I going to do without that? And halfway through the first act of this show, I was like, I have never felt more alive. I had never felt more connected to what I was doing. And I was doing the most ridiculous show. But I had never had more fun on stage. Yeah. And I could feel all of it. And it was so much more intense to feel all of it. And I was like, oh man, it's that moment where Dorothy taps her shoes together, clicks her heels together. And, you know, Glinda's like, you've had the ability to go home the whole
time. All the time.
You've had this the whole time, the whole journey.
Yeah.
You just needed to.
You're always
believe
whole.
It. Yeah. You're always
all
whole.
The time.
Yeah. And to believe that is a much more powerful experience for me personally.
Thank you. So you have a production, Elf,
yes.
coming up.
Yes.
Tell us your favorite message. Because I know there's lots of messages. You choose your productions because they have these great messages.
Yes.
What's one of your favorite ones from Elf?
Honestly, I think my favorite thing about the entire show, Elf, is the acceptance of this tremendously goofy human being who's trying to find out who he is by coming to New York and trying to find his father and trying to find out who he is. And he is who he is. He is who he's been raised to be. He is this happy, joyous, wonderful creature. And it's about the rest of the world accepting who he is. And so him being able to accept that himself.
It's beautiful. A lovely way to end the inner game. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
We'll talk to you next time.